I'm going to be in the Torah portion this morning. I ran across something by Rabbi Sinclair, who may be my new favorite rabbi. Jonathan Sacks was very good too, but Sinclair was kind of fun. So let's take a look at what's going on with the Exodus. God deliberately took them away from the short route, and that's in Exodus 13:17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around by way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea, and the people of Israel went out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle. He's promised them he's taking them to Canaan. He promises them a land full of milk and honey, and they do a right turn and head off into the wilderness. His reasoning, of course, is that if we go the short way, they may want to turn back. You've all read Exodus lots of times, and you know that about every 20 minutes they want to go back to Egypt. There were two or three instances today, there will be more. So his idea that they might want to give up is fairly sound. If you remember the story of Lot with Sodom, this parallels it in lots of ways. You remember the angels go to Sodom and they go into Lot's house and they say, all right, we're going to destroy the city. Let's get out of here. And Lot does not want to go. Even after all of the men of Sodom are beating on his door, trying to get in at these guys, he still doesn't want to leave. And they finally have to grab him by the hand and say, all right, come on, out we go. And then as they leave, his wife really doesn't want to leave, and she's looking back, and she gets assaulted. So the idea of somebody being in a really bad place and not wanting to leave it is very biblical. So the children of Israel in slavery for 400 years had to be driven out. Now, a Calvinist would say that God knows everything. I will say that he learned from Lot. Having tried to get Lot out of there, God says, people don't want to leave bad places. So what he did is he arranged for the Egyptians to actually expel the Israelites. And he set it up so that they were absolutely not welcome and they were told to get out. Furthermore, God did not have to change Pharaoh's heart and have Pharaoh come after them. Now, he says, so I can get glory over Pharaoh and so forth, and I understand that, but there's another reason there. What he wants to do is make sure that the children of Israel recognize that Egypt doesn't want them back. The idea of then wandering back to Egypt after Pharaoh's army's been destroyed and so forth is sort of a non-starter. And furthermore, as they get out into the wilderness, as we saw today, God says, well, I don't want them to go the short way lest they get into a war and lose heart. Well, they get into a war here with Amalek out in the wilderness. So what's God doing? What God is doing, to use the phrase of Rabbi Sinclair, is he is burning the bridge behind them. This is actually a military term. It's happened a number of times in history where an army crosses a body of water and then the commander turns around and burns the bridge that they crossed over or burns the boats that they got there in. And the whole idea there is you're either going to win or you're going to die. There's no retreat here. A couple of examples. In 363, Julian the Apostate, who was an emperor of Rome, invaded Persia. After his army crossed the Tigris River, he had all the pontoons and the barges burned so that there would be no thought of going back. In 1519, Cortez, when he invaded Mexico, as he landed on the shore, he turned around and burned the boats. So the only option here was to go forward and conquer Mexico, which they did. So this idea of cutting off retreat in a dramatic way so that everybody understands that your choices are win this thing or die sort of encourages the soldiers, if you will. What God is doing here with Israel is exactly the same thing. He's taking them out into the wilderness and he's taking them out beyond their lines of supply. We're out of food. What are we going to eat? Manna from heaven. which means that you are so far out in the wilderness that if you decide to pick up and go back to Egypt, you're going to starve. Same thing with water. They get out into the wilderness and they discover that they don't have any water. Now, the first one, of course, is you turn the water sweet, and there's a story about that, and we'll talk in Midrash. But the water from the rock, the message is, you are out here, and there's no way to leave, because if you leave and try to go back to Egypt, you're either going to die of thirst on the way, or you're going to starve to death. This is it. So what he's doing is he's burning the bridges behind them, letting them know there's no alternative to being here. Keep that in mind. Switch gears for a moment. The nature of God, our God, is completely different than the nature of pagan gods. Pagan gods have territories, and every people in that time had their own set of gods. They were territorial and so forth. So the idea that the Hebrews had their God was not foreign to anybody. But the relationship of pagans to their God is strictly one of power and advantage. Gods are dangerous, so you got to placate them. You got to make sure that you don't get them upset with you. So we have all these rituals to placate the gods. And if the gods are happy with you, they'll give you victory in battle and they'll give you good crops and all that kind of stuff. So it's strictly a power and economic relationship between pagan nations and their pagan gods. And if you'll notice the Song of the Sea, as they crossed and looked back on the dead Egyptians and they sang the song, this is almost the song of a triumphing army to a pagan god. It is entirely power-based. Well, our God is slightly different than all of their gods, other than the fact that he's the one who exists and they don't. His relationship to us, he wants to be different. And the relationship that he wants is one of affection and individuality. That's unique. Up until this point, all Israel has seen and all Egypt has seen is the fact that this God exists, and he's really, really powerful, and he's on the Hebrew side. That's it. And the Hebrews are seeing the same thing. Our God is really, really powerful. He's really, really glorious, and he's on our side. Power relationship. So what God is doing as he takes Israel out into the wilderness is he is showing them another side of himself. He's showing them that he can care for them. Now, don't get me wrong, periodically they get really uppity and fire falls down from heaven and he kills a bunch of them. So, I mean, it's sort of like your relationship with a stern father. He loves you, but get out of line and you'll feel his hand on your backside. But the point is, he wants a relationship with his people separate and distinct from the relationship that other gods have with their people. And that's going to take time for them to learn. So he takes them out into the wilderness, burns the bridges behind them, and now it's just Israel and God. There's no distractions, no internet, there's no bazaar to go through, nothing. It's just God and them. And that's when he starts to woo them. One of the prophets says, when Israel goes astray, God says, I will take them out into the wilderness where I will woo them. And the idea is one-on-one, no distractions, you and God. So what he does is teaches them about himself through Moses and through the things that he does. And Moses explains God to the people. We'll have the Ten Commandments of Mount Sinai and so forth. But the whole deal there is, this God who has taken you to be his people wants a relationship with you that's fundamentally and characteristically different than the relationship that all of the rest of the world has with their pagan gods. The problem he has is slavery is, in many cases, very attractive. People like to be secure. Remember Lot. Didn't want to leave. You know, he was a member of the Rotary Club and all that kind of thing, and he didn't want to leave that, and certainly his wife didn't want to leave it either. He had to be grabbed by the hand and dragged out of town, And on the way, he said, well, instead of going out into the hills, how about if I just go to this next little town? He doesn't want to leave. The complaint that Israel has over and over and over again is, why did you take us out of Egypt? We had cucumbers, we had fish. Well, yeah, I mean, they killed us, but, we had cucumbers and fish. Furthermore, things were stable, and you get used to being beaten every now and then. But it's better than the uncertainty that we have out here in the wilderness. We don't have any idea what's going on here. And about every 20 minutes, we run out of water, or we run out of food, or fire falls down from heaven. It was really much more stable back there in Egypt. Let us go back. And that generation that came out of Egypt, in fact, doesn't make it to the far side of the wilderness. They can't. They're temperamentally unable to do it. And Joshua and Caleb and their children who grow up in the presence of God in the wilderness, those are the only ones that get it and are able to go the next step. That's what's going on here. Once the emotional high wears off, Red Sea splits, the Egyptian army is drowned. I mean, this is a tremendous emotional high. After that, reality sets in. And then you get all this complaining and wanting to go back to Egypt. This military metaphor of burning your bridges. The idea there is you either are going to overcome or you're going to die. Well, God has a similar metaphor for us. We're in Revelation on Tuesday night. By the way, the entire Bible is a chiasm from Genesis 1 to Revelation 22. It's a giant chiasm. Starts in a garden, ends in a garden. And the center of the chiasm is the cross. So Revelation 21. He who was seated on the throne said, "Behold, I am making all things new." Also he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." And he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have his heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death." So your military metaphor here is, all right, we're committed. Conquer or die. That's what God says. Conquer or die. Now, this is where Rabbi Sinclair comes in. One of the things that he was saying is, do you need to burn a bridge? Or another way to say it is, what bridges do you need to burn? He uses examples. And I'll give you a personal example. I had a friend. I used to go elk hunting with him and so forth. And when I decided to become a pastor, I cut off my friendship with him. He was a good guy, but his personality was he sailed too close to the edge. He was always, right there on the edge of when we go hunting, he'd sort of slip over into private land, that kind of stuff. I have the same tendencies. So I knew that if we were going to be friends and I was going to be a pastor, at some point there was going to be trouble. I just knew it. So sad to say, I burned that bridge, and I haven't seen him in 30 years. And I say, he's not a bad guy or anything like that. It was just, I recognized that that was something that was not going to work. Fear. What are you afraid of? Is there a bridge you need to burn there? How about your job? Is the job you're in doing what you want it to do? Or is this Egypt that you're there and stay there just because it's comfortable? Are you holding on to bitterness or anger or unforgiveness? I will gently suggest that you look at those things and you burn that bridge. Now, the thing about the wilderness is that's where God takes you when he wants to talk to you, because there's no distractions. We've all been in the wilderness at one time or the other. That's part of the life of being a believer. All of a sudden, things quit working, and you got nothing but you and God. The temptation is always going to be to go back to the familiar. You're going to be looking back at the cucumbers and the fish. That's the temptation. And what you need to do is you need to burn the bridge and say, I'm going to get through this, I'm going to conquer, or I'm going to die. And at that point, God will help you against Amalek. By the way, one of the things to notice is they're up to their hips in Amalek when they say, is God with us or not? And God shows, yeah, I'm with you, and I'll take care of you. So, as you go through life, what it takes to become truly free is to get out of Egypt, get out of Sodom, get out of wherever you are. Now, the only way out is through the wilderness. So expect to be taken through the wilderness in that process. But resolve that the bridge back to Egypt is no longer there. The boats are no longer there to take you back across the Red Sea. That option is not available to you. That's what burning the bridge means. And yeah, you're going to miss the cucumbers, and yeah, you're going to miss the fish. But the way forward is victory. And that's what God expects you to do.